Shotgun for Prescott. He drops to throw. Looking, fires middle of the field, and that ball is picked off! It is picked off by Rayshon Jenkins! He's running it back along the right sideline! That is going to be a touchdown! That is going to be a touchdown! The Jags are going to win it on a Rayshon Jenkins pick six! Are you kidding me? How good is that?
Back and looking, throws wide open left side. Brock Wright with it to the 30. Cuts back to the 10, to the 5, yes! To the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby, how big is that?
Snap spot. Joseph, right footed kick. It is good! And the Minnesota Vikings have completed the greatest comeback in the history of the National Football League.
Raiders only a three up by the line of scrimmage. Mac Jones hands it off on a draw to Ramondre Stevenson. Breaks out of a tackle at the 50, has the 45, breaks away from another tackle, pitches it backwards, and now Jacoby Myers spinning around. He throws it to Chandler Jones in midfield. Interception! Chandler Jones racing towards the end zone. It scores! Oh, my goodness! Oh, my goodness!
This might be one of the dumbest teams I've ever seen. This is a heads roll type freaking play right here. Oh my God.
Hump day homers. Always fun.
That play is still amazing. Mike, I've gotten such
unbelievable.
I've gotten such a kick out of watching back the play and viewing the guys on the sidelines that it even when I watch the game back on film, just it's amazing the reactions and things you see when that play was unfolding from some of the coaches and guys on the sidelines.
Well, that contributed to a drop of 5 spots by the New England Patriots from number 10 down to number 15 in the power rankings. They're on the outside looking in the playoff chase, and they may not get in at all. We shall see. But, Chris, that top 6, we talked about it last week.
That's
there are
right.
6 teams that feel like viable contenders. The Cowboys lost and fell 3 spots, but they are still in that same top 6. That's the line between 6 and 7. Between the true contenders and the everyone else. And maybe the Dolphins can invade as a representative of the everyone else. Maybe the Commanders, maybe the Giants, maybe the Lions, who are now up to number 11, maybe the Chargers, if they just let Justin Herbert throw the ball around more than they currently do. But it really is feeling like the champion's going to come from those top 6, maybe those top 5. Maybe I'm ready to cross off the Cowboys after seeing what they've done the past 2 weeks. You know, they looked so dominant at one point. And now, between almost losing to the Texans and losing to the Jaguars, squandering a 17-point lead, maybe they fall out and it's 5 teams that legitimately can win it.
Well, that's what's frustrating about the Cowboys sometimes. I think they're still a team we got to keep in that cream of the crop group. I do. The Texans game, you know, I think we've seen teams kind of fall asleep at the wheel knowing they're playing the Houston Texans. And they made some mistakes where, you know, they controlled the game and the physical aspect of it, but, you know, had some turnovers and things that just, again, it's the NFL, it's professional football, where if you give the team too many advantages, you're going to be in a dogfight. Last week, the thing with them was, hey, the offense made the mistakes in Dak Prescott against Houston. Well, the offense played great against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know Dak Prescott threw 2 interceptions. He was unlucky, just like we just saw right there. That was an appropriate throw to Noah Brown there to get the first down. He can't knock that ball up in the air. He threw it low and safe to protect him so he could catch it, curl up, get the first down, keep the drive going. He put the ball exactly where he was supposed to. His other interception, you know, maybe we can question the play call because they're up by 10 and all that, but they're throwing it. His arm gets hit as he's throwing the football. Ball goes over the receiver's head, interception. They fixed that part, but then it was the defense that let them down last week. So, you know, they are a little bit of a roller coaster. We know that. And that's one of the problems with the Cowboys. It's Dallas. They're the king of Texas, and everybody tells them how awesome they are when they're awesome. But I still think they're there, Mike. Who, okay, out of that top 6 is your, like, number 1 team that can upset that you look at? I know you mentioned some of them, and I know you didn't maybe mention the Vikings, but who's the one that you just – that just screams to you, ooh, they could be a team that messes up this top 6.
Last week I said the Commanders.
Yeah.
I feel differently, obviously, after last week's games. I'm not going to take the bait again with the Vikings that this tremendous win becomes the thrust that pushes them to a Super Bowl win, because the last time they had a big win like that, what happened? They lost 40-3 against the Cowboys. And I think they're going to have a hard time recovering from emotion what happened last Saturday when the Giants come to town, because the Giants are still trying to punch their ticket. I think the Chargers currently can do it if they can stay healthy and if they embrace Justin Herbert and let him go out and be who he's capable of being. I think the Lions, if they get in, and I think the Packers, who aren't on the front screen yet, the Packers, if they get in, are going to be a handful for the reason we've already discussed. They figured out what they need to do, and they're doing it. The question is, can they win enough games to get to the postseason in order to do it there? And if the Vikings are the 2 seed and the Packers or the Lions are the 7 seed, upset alert in the wild card round, Chris.
Yeah, I hear you there. I do.
May not even be an upset. Packers may be favored if they're playing the Vikings in Minnesota by the time we get to that point.
Yeah, we'll see. We're gonna see I gotta see a little more of the Packers before I can buy onto that storyline first. And I do. I mean, I know it was a step in the right direction, but I'm not ready to, like, ooh, crown them as back yet. And I hear your points. I mean, if they got in, I get it. They got some weapons, and Rodgers his arm is still live, and he's not going to be intimidated to where they'd be scary. It's the whole team and everything about it. I got to see a little bit more. I do. But I'm with you with your Chargers thought. I do think they're a team to watch out for. I don't think we've given them enough credit for the fact they've been a very beat-up football team. And, you know, again, for those reasons, hey, I don't know who to blame. I understand that's a reoccurring issue there out there in Los Angeles. But at the same time, it is a reality. And, man, if Bosa gets back and, you know, there's a chance that Rashawn Slater, their awesome left tackle, could be back. The receivers are back. That could be a team. Yeah, you don't want to see them. Another team I'll throw in there. The Dolphins are in that category for me too, Mike. I know they lost 3 in a row, but there's like some parts of me that feel better about them in a lot of ways. They answered some questions for me last week. They did. I mean, going up in the cold, playing in those elements, they didn't melt under those conditions, or freeze, I should say, maybe more appropriately. Tua wasn't totally outmatched or bad that way. So those are two that jump out to me, and the Ravens. If Lamar Jackson gets back and the O-line stays healthy, those are 3 teams in my little list that I could see maybe upsetting that top 6, Mike.
Surprised you didn't mention the Jaguars.
Yeah, I know. I'm not ready to say they can upset that. You know, they might jump into the party and get in the playoffs and be a little scary, but I'm not ready to say they'll upset the top 6 quite yet.
The Dolphins went up a spot even though they lost, so I agree with your assessment that in defeat, they nevertheless impressed. And that Packers-Dolphins game on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I mean, we went from early in the season, okay, yeah, well, it's football, it's Christmas, and then it's like, oh, man, all these games are going to be bad. All of them are going to be bad. And now one of them is emerging, and that's why I said yesterday they should be able to slide them around on Christmas Day and move that 1 o'clock game to a better spot, because that's the best game of the day by far. And I'm sorry if that offends the sensibilities of anyone at 345 Park Avenue, but it's true. And they need to account maybe some flexibility into that. If they want to take over Christmas and they want to be a viable alternative to the NBA, they better make sure they deliver good games that day like they did this past Saturday, when they can engineer it to pick the games that they put on that Saturday, Showdown Saturday, whatever they called it. And they got 2 out of 3 great games, and the third one was still pretty good. It just paled in comparison to the first one and the third one. They need that flexibility. But Packers-Dolphins, great, great game coming up to start the slate on Christmas Day, because both teams need it. And we'll find out a lot about these teams. We'll find out a lot about the Green Bay Packers. Has it, you know, because who have they really beaten? In fairness.
Yeah.
Who have they really beaten since they've turned this corner?
That's right.
The
That's
Bears
what I mean. Right.
And the Rams.
That's right.
BFD.
Exactly.
You beat Tuanon and company, then you're impressing some people.
That's what I'm saying. I need to see a little bit more there, right? You know, I hear what you're saying. I see the potential a little bit, and, you know, maybe they can do something. But this is a different animal than the last 2 teams they've played. I mean, one team is just playing for culture and toughness with the Bears. The Rams are a total disaster. Now they're playing a team that's, you know, played some tough games. It's crucial. It's on their field. And they're explosive and as talented as any team in football, and they're certainly more explosive and talented than the Green Bay Packers. So this will be a big test to know if Green Bay is for real and can make a for real push here at the end of the season.
Couple of questions real quick. Ramos Mark, explanation for the Bengals being ranked lower than the Chiefs. Well, the Chiefs are a better team and they have a better record. I know the Bengals beat them in Cincinnati, but the Chiefs are still the better team, and I feel better about the Chiefs potentially winning the Super Bowl than the Bengals, especially if the Chiefs can avoid playing the Bengals in the postseason.
Well, listen, I think this is a good conversation. I do. I understand what our man at Ramos Mark is saying here a little. I think you, like, you know, and again, I'm not saying I would do this, but I do think you can make the argument that the Bengals are the best team in the AFC, maybe from top to bottom. I worry about the Chiefs defense a little bit. I can't lie. I know they got Magic Man at quarterback. You know, I worry about the Bills and that, you know, the defense is good, it's not great, and then it's the Josh Allen show. I mean, how can you – I mean, the things he did the other night. I mean, come on. There's not a lot of people open. There's not a lot of anything. It's just him throwing lasers and making unreal plays. To where the Bengals, the defense is legit. They can stop the run. They can cover people. You know, they can do all that. The O-line, since it's been fixed here, they can run the ball a little bit, and we know they can throw, and so they can play a little bit of every game. I guess that's my thing here. I don't know if there's a team that really the Bengals will play that really pose any, ooh, whoa, that's a tough matchup for them. That's all my food for thought is. I don't, you know, that's where they're good. They match up about with any style of play, and that's where they're maybe a little different than the Bills and the Chiefs.
Another question, Dan and his base. If Purdy has the hot hand and Jimmy G is healthy again, who gets the start? Is this another Alex Smith, Colin Kaepernick situation? Absolutely. It's a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
Purdy stays.
Right.
Purdy plays until Purdy's injured, if that happens. Jimmy G is not getting back on the field because they finally found a way to break the spell permanently with Jimmy G.
Right.
You don't put him back out there. Then you got to figure out what you're going to do with him in 2023. You got to pay him. You got to do something. It's over with Jimmy G. It's Purdy and it's Trey Lance for 2023 and beyond. I think that's a no-brainer. Purdy is the guy. He's looked better than Jimmy G has all year long in the three games that we've seen Purdy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a crazy statement. You're right. I mean, he brings some element to their team that Jimmy G did not bring. And the way he's throwing the ball in the drop back pass game, and I think the way the team's just playing overall, yeah, there's just no doubt. I mean, again, if Jimmy G were to be back, we're talking about maybe for the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. What? No, there's no way. Unless you got to the Super Bowl and Brock Purdy threw three or four interceptions in every playoff game and somehow you still won the game, okay. Then maybe. All right, yeah, Brock Purdy's thrown 10 interceptions in the playoffs. We're going to start Jimmy Garoppolo in the Super Bowl. Okay, I understand that. Other than that, I mean, just an absolute disaster? Yes, you ride Brock Purdy, and he's given that team energy, and they're rolling right now.
He would have to do what Jimmy Garoppolo did 3 years ago, be so bad throwing the ball that it freaks out Kyle Shanahan and turns the quarterback into Bob Greasy and basically says, you're not passing the ball. And then Jimmy G comes back and say, please come help us. Because, yeah, if he's not ready until the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl, they will have gotten that far with Brock Purdy. Why would you disrupt
right.
it then with a guy who's just coming back, who hasn't played, and they've all taken to Brock Purdy. They can't put his jerseys on the shelves out there. They can't keep him in stock. He's quickly becoming a very popular figure. I have a feeling he's going to be the week one starter next year, and I don't know whether they keep Trey Lance or not, but the way it's going so far, it's the Brock Purdy show in San Francisco. All right, let's take a break. When we return, it's after further review time for week 15. We'll do that when this Wednesday edition of PFT Live continues right after this. PFT Live Wednesday edition. Chris, you and I didn't get a chance to talk about this on Monday because one of us was working and one of us was sleeping. But Miles Simmons and I broke down the Terry McLaurin illegal formation penalty that wiped out a touchdown. I got a little heated. I'm concerned about the influence that one official can have over the outcome of a drive, the outcome of a game, a ticky-tack foul, completely irrelevant to anything happening on the field. You throw in the fact that there was communication, apparently, between the official and Terry McLaurin as McLaurin tried to get lined up, and it's something that happens at every level of football. You see it all the time. The receiver looks over, and the official, you know, either says yes, no, whatever. You can tell by the hand signal. I was very surprised.
I hear you.
By the video of it. It was blown up, and you could see that interaction. And maybe McLaurin didn't move up as far as he should have.
No,
but
he didn't.
No, if you're gonna help the guy, you got to tell him. I mean, if you have a habit of helping the guy, and we see it in football all the time. You don't have to. You don't have your hand on the flag, ready to throw it. Like, I got this guy now.
Well, he's holding his arm out there.
But when
we go back, I want to show this one more time. He's holding his arm out there after he tells him to go. Here's the line. You're not on it. And he turned away and already gave up on the conversation. I've never known a ref to screw a player over and go, hey, you're good, and then throw a flag and do that.
But watch his right hand right there. Here,
well,
I got
because
my flag
he did.
Ready.
Well,
ready.
He did it, but that's after he held his hand out to show him where the line of scrimmage was for 5 seconds. The ball's on the half yard line. He's lined up on the 2. He moves up to the 1¾ yard line when the guy tells him when he looks over. So. You know,
it looks worse when it's blown up. He looks farther back when it's blown up.
But, yeah.
That, even though it gives us a better look at the official, it makes him look farther off the ball.
Well, he was clearly a yard behind the line of scrimmage. And to me, again, I know we're going to show a clip of Dean Blandino.
He's ahead of the guy in the slot. He's ahead of the guy in the slot. I just think, Chris, we don't know what was said
between the two. Right.
And hopefully there's some audio that doesn't disappear forever. Right?
Right.
Because there's microphones everywhere at field level. But I don't see anything in that interaction. I mean, I agree with you. He puts his hand out. But McLaurin is dismayed by it. I mean, what advantage does he have by being in the wrong spot?
There's no competitive edge here.
Completely irrelevant to the play.
No, there is. Because, again, so if we're going to let people line up like that, then there's no point in ever having a good DB to jam the receiver. That would be the advantage. So if they did throw a fade and you were doing that, every receiver is going to go, oh, wait, I'm the X. I'm supposed to be on the ball. Can I step back a yard and a half so, like, Jalen Ramsey or Marlon Humphrey can't jam me and then I can get off the line of scrimmage and get a career release? That's the advantage.
But on that play, it doesn't matter.
But what are we going to – Mike, you talk about it all the time. If we're going to call the rules, we got to call the rules. This is the way the game's played for 100 years. Seven people on the line of scrimmage. That's all I'm saying. And, again, I don't know what was said. You're right. It's tricky. It is. And I know Terry McLaurin, he's an awesome dude. He thought he said the guy was good. Maybe he was saying, hey, here is good. I don't know. Again, they're in the end zone there. There's people yelling either way. And it was a big moment. That one didn't bother
McLaurin
me as much as the non-pass
interference
after.
Right. He does that one last hand gesture. He doesn't look back over at the official. Watch this here. He looks at him and he points, and then he throws his hand up again. I don't know what he's doing there.
I know.
But again, I'd love to hear the audio. They're close enough that maybe they could have heard each other speaking. Folks have said there's no obligation whatsoever for the officials to help. John Hussey, the referee on Sunday night, said something to that effect. The reality is there's always that communication.
There is.
There's always that effort by the official and the player to make sure the player's in the right spot. And there's clearly no cause for the official to give bad information.
Right.
That's what concerns me about that.
Yeah, I hear
you. It showed me, regardless of what the explanation is, it showed me there is a pathway for an official to engage in some shenanigans if he or she chooses to do so away from the ball. You only think of the referee really as the one who's got the ability to screw things up or whoever's calling pass interference 40 yards down the field. Those officials on the line of scrimmage at each side, there's an opening there for some shenanigans, and I hadn't thought of that before, and that's what concerns me, because the NFL better be damn sure they've got the ship properly righted as to the possibility that someone may use that discretion to take a key touchdown off the board. to keep a team from winning that may have been on track to do so. That's what alarmed me about that.
Yeah, I hear you. I totally understand that, and you know, we've hit on this a lot. It's the concerning thing with this era and gambling and all that. It's just one guy, but again, I did think he was off the line of scrimmage. And I don't want the guys to be too ticky-tack. I understand that. But to me, that was, you know, I thought pretty egregious that he was. That one didn't bother me maybe as some of the other calls in the football game did.
Well, let's focus on this one just for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Are you willing to accept in advance whatever Dean Blandino says about it, given that he was a very accomplished and effective senior VP of officiating, who ultimately left the NFL because, as he told me on the record a couple of years back, the NFL doesn't value that position, i.e. they are cheap.
Yeah.
They wouldn't pay what that position is worth, and you get what you don't pay for. Do you defer? Are you willing to defer to Blandino, or do you want to hear what he has to say?
No, I do. I want to hear what I'm certainly – I'm always open. If there's an angle or something he's going to point out to me that I haven't thought – I mean, I'm not saying I'm right. But I've watched a lot of football, and I do know the game a little bit, so I'm very interested to hear what he has to say here.
Let's hear from Dean Blandino on the illegal formation call against Terry McLaurin.
The official and McLaurin do have it, an exchange. The official does appear to show McLaurin where the line is. McLaurin does move up. He gets set, and then the ball is snapped, and the official throws the flag. Look, when you have that exchange with a player, and we always talk about in this situation when you have two receivers that are split out wide, we just want to see a slight stagger. We call it a blade of grass philosophy. And if they're not directly on the same line, and one is a little bit forward and one is a little bit back, then we don't want to call that. There's no advantage. The defense knows that both of those players are eligible players. And in that situation, to me, that is way too technical to make that call. I don't care if it's in the first quarter with 12 minutes to go or in the fourth quarter on the potential game-tying touchdown. It's too technical.
Okay, so I understand what he's saying, and I agree with it, but he doesn't factor in your thought that if it is a fade there, you're in a better position to avoid the jam because you're farther from the line of scrimmage, you're farther from that point of impact that you have to try to get around to try to make the catch.
Exactly.
In that specific moment, though, obviously it doesn't matter.
Right.
So, but what he's saying is
They know everything he says.
Line.
Right. He
you
knows
just have to be
eligible.
Ahead of the guy in the slot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Everything he says there is yes, I agree. My thing is that if you're going to start letting people be that far behind the line of scrimmage, then you're never going to let a DB jam a receiver on the who's the X receiver, which is what he was supposed to be there. The X receiver is the guy that is on the line of scrimmage, usually to the open side where there's no tight end. That would be the advantage. That to me is where you got to be careful on this specific play. He's exactly right. And yes, you know, but again, the referee doesn't know that. He doesn't know that either. He's throwing the flag as soon as the ball snapped. He doesn't know if Heinicke pulled away to throw a fade or do that. So that's where it's a little tricky. And that to me is the only way as far as the tactical advantage, you know, part is. It's just that fade from a receiver.
Later in that same drive, fourth down and goal for the Washington Commanders. Taylor Heinicke throws a pass to Curtis Samuel, who is covered. He is very covered. He is so covered that the arms of the defensive back literally are covering him, and there is no flag thrown for defensive pass interference. There's the throw. There's the failure to catch because the arms are literally draped over the top of Curtis Samuel. I said, when you see still frames of it, it's like when, you know, someone stands behind someone and sticks their arms through their armpits and moves their hands around like that's their arms. That's what it looked like he was doing. Like, the red gloves are Curtis Samuel's arms there. That's clearly defensive pass interference. There it is. There's the one. When you look at it, it looks like Curtis Samuel has tiny little arms with white sleeves and red gloves.
It is.
That's how the arms are covering his.
Right.
But, you know, Chris, this gets back to what we hear all the time, and I don't agree with it, that, oh, they would have called it early in the game, but when the game's on the line, you let them play. You know, that's not letting them play. That's letting them mug each other.
Exactly. That's the problem. And it's wrong, and it's wrong in the fact of how egregiously the penalties called the other way earlier parts of the game. I mean, DB blows in the ear of a receiver and we call pass interference the whole game. And then we're going to let manslaughter and mugging go on the last few drives of the game. That it's just stupid. And that's going to make people question.
I think manslaughter would be a foul. Well, I think manslaughter
maybe,
would be a foul.
Maybe. It's just, it's like, it, but it, that's where people question the integrity of the game. And that's where it bothers me. I don't understand that. And then again, in the first three quarters of the game, there's pass interference called on plays where you just go, I can't even believe they call that pass interference. And then they don't call that. It's across the board in the NFL. And I don't get that right now. And it's to me not a good look for the game. And it's about, again, the consistency that I think so many coaches in football talk about, to where it's almost like end of the game. Okay, I guess we have to teach the game a different way here. We're going to play one game for 3.5 quarters. Last two drives, hey, defenders, let me coach you. Just pull and push and hold, and receivers – push and pull, and it just doesn't matter. And it's going to be a WWF brawl in the secondary. And that's not right. And they just need to be the same way throughout.
The issue of full-time officials comes up from time to time. It never gets much traction. The NFL is trying to avoid it for one very important reason. The NFL is cheap.
Right.
Sorry, it's true.
So it's the second call
the NFL
we're talking about
pay.
Cheap, right?
Doesn't want to pay.
Here we are.
Right,
yes.
Right. And what happens is, you've got guys who have primary employment, and the NFL is the side hustle. It's the second gig. So you've got your life, your personal life, that's going to take a certain amount of your time. You've got your primary job, and then you've got the NFL job that takes up whatever time you can find at night or whenever, and then on the weekends you're all in. But if you're full-time, you're all in all the time. And here's what would happen. In a world of full-time NFL officials, they would all live in one central location, and they would fly out of that location to their game assignments every week, or drive, depending upon where it is and where their game is. And then they would, immediately after the game, all come back, right? And then the next afternoon or Tuesday morning or whatever, all day Tuesday, Monday night, whatever, everybody gets together in the same room. And I know it's 150 of them. So what? Classes convene all the time with that many people in it. Schools coast to coast, colleges and law schools and universities, not high schools that I know of that big. But you get everybody together. And what do you do? What do you do? You go over all the calls from the weekend that was, that has any reason, any merit, any cause to have conversation. And you do it over and over again, week after week, day after day, game after game. And then what happens is guys start to understand what is and isn't pass interference, when they should and shouldn't call it. All the rules where you have variation among the 17 crews, you get consistency. That's the value of full-time officiating.
100%.
And then after the season's over, right, you keep doing it. You go back over. You just keep meeting and talking and communicating, and also you've got the accountability, because you know what? It's one thing to get your grades emailed to you for how you did that week. It's another thing to get called out and have it all discussed in a room with all your colleagues and all your peers.
Right.
It's going to make you more determined to get it right.
Yeah.
But again, Chris, it's going to be expensive, because you have to pay the official enough to get the official to give up his or her primary employment and go all in with a job that has a degree of accountability that most jobs don't have. We're not graded every single day. Thank God you and I don't get a report card after every show on what we screwed up or didn't screw up. Most jobs in this country don't have that kind of immediate, constant, everyday accountability like officiating does. So you hit a bad stretch in officiating, and you've put all your eggs in that basket, and you screw it up, you're done. So you have to offer them enough money that they're willing to do that, and they don't want to pay. They don't value the position. This is the same league that a decade ago had a commissioner who told us during the negotiations with the officiating union, the replacement officials will be every bit as good as the regular officials. We saw how that went. And there are people in the league office to this day amazed that it took 3 weeks for that house of cards to fall down. They thought it was going to immediately collapse. So it's all about spending the money, and they have the money. They just won't spend it, Chris.
Yeah.
No, and I hate to I hate to harp on it, but people need to understand. That's what it comes down to. So the fans and the media need to stand up and hold accountable those who refuse to spend the money to make it better for all of us.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I do think it would make the league better. There's no question about that. You know, it's yes, full-time officials, the fact of, you know, talking, being around the game all the time, and it being, you know, you're almost going to be like a professional football player that way, to where, yeah, you're always around it, you're always talking it. You know, OTAs, hey, you get to be on, maybe hopefully get on to be on the field throughout OTAs, again, to where you're always used to the speed of the game. I would love to see that adjustment. I think it would be a positive thing
for the
NFL.
Keep him in shape. Do simulations. Right. I had this conversation with Mike Pereira once after he'd left the NFL. Like, what would you do? How would you keep them busy all year long? I could come up with a full year plan like that. It's very easy because there's more they could be doing that they aren't currently doing. And anybody who does two jobs. There was a time when I was practicing law and trying to do this. You recognize at some level, if I just pick one or the other, I'm going to be a lot better. Not that I'm going to be great, but I'm going to be better at the one that I pick because the other one is taken away from the one that I'm trying to focus on currently. So anyway, it all comes down to the NFL paying. You pay enough, you'll get good officials who will go all in full time, and then the officiating will be better. Let's take a break. We've got more PFT Live to come right after this.
I don't know how else I can say it, guys. I've said it three different occasions. Well, then I guess I have to say it. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
That was 16 years ago today, and Nick Saban continues to be the Alabama coach. That was something.
Do you think there's any way, like, maybe he really didn't think he was going to be at that point, and then they came back and made an offer, and he was like, oh, well, damn. Now, okay, maybe they gave me everything I wanted, and I've been asking for it. I didn't think they were going to deliver. You think there's any way that was a possibility?
There was a biography of Saban from a few years ago that I read, and like every other book I've read in my life, I don't remember all of the details. But I think it was more along the lines of, he knew he had to say that. What else can you really say?
Yeah.
You still got games to coach for the Dolphins. But it wasn't done. It wasn't done. And there was further negotiation after that to get it done. And who knows? Maybe that was part of his ploy. That's part of his leverage. I ain't taking the job. Well, now we got to dig a little bit deeper to get him to take the job. But either way, 16 years later, still the Alabama coach, and probably will be 16 years from now. We've got 3 weeks left in the regular season. We're going to do a draft of the most intriguing games, or I guess biggest games, whatever. You know what we mean. The best games to come over the final 3 weeks of the regular season. Chris, you're up.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to week 17 for the first one. And it's a Monday night football game, and it's to me the biggest game left on the schedule, right? Bills-Bengals. Again, I think, you know, minus a flop from one of these teams, and I know the Bengals have the New England Patriots this weekend, so it's not a given, but I expect them to win the football game. I don't think we're ruining anything for our picks podcast. I'd be pretty shocked if you took the Patriots in this one, where this Bills-Bengals could have, you know, huge implications, not only just on seeding, but maybe home field advantage, you know, and again, as good as the AFC is, you want the highest seed possible because, yeah, it's very realistic that the number one seed could lose in the divisional round, and now you're the number two seed or even the number three seed, and, hey, we got to host the AFC championship game. So that's the first one on my radar there, Mike.
I think that game's going to determine the one seed. If the Bills win, they'll be the one seed. If the Bengals win, it's going to be Cincinnati or Kansas City that's the one seed. That is a huge game, and that is the biggest game left on the schedule. I'm going to Christmas Day. And not Buccaneers-Cardinals. I'm going Packers at Dolphins. For the reasons we discussed earlier in the show, we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams. The Dolphins trying to hang on. The Packers trying to get in. The Packers have beaten the Bears and the Rams, as I said earlier, B and F and D. Let's see them beat the Dolphins if we're going to take them seriously down the stretch. That's a huge game. That's just a huge game, and it's got that special added aura because it's on Christmas.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely one of the ones on my list here because it's relevant right now. It's the biggest thing on the radar as we see right now. It's where I'm going to kind of stick with this week too, just because of the importance right now, and I don't know where it might be in 2 weeks. The Chiefs-Seahawks game, quietly lining up to be one of the more exciting games, I think, of this weekend that maybe people aren't noticing. I mean, one, we know the Seahawks can throw the ball and make some moves, and the Chiefs' defense is not the 49ers' defense. So I would think that the Seahawks can make this interesting, and they're fighting for their life now. I mean, it's do or die. It looks bleak. So between that and then as your point you just made between when I was talking about Bengals and Bills, well, they still need the Chiefs. One of those teams, they need the Chiefs to falter here, you know, or the Bengals do especially, right? The Bengals need the Chiefs to lose another game if they want to win out and then be the AFC champion. So that's a big one this week for both football teams. The Chiefs, you know, to still have that chance to maybe be the number one seed, and the Seahawks are on the outside looking in right now.
I'm tempted to go Titans-Jaguars because I think it's going to be for the AFC South crown, but that, there's no clarity on that yet.
Yeah, I know. That's tough.
I'll go Ravens-Bengals week 18. Rematch of a game earlier this year that Baltimore won. Currently, the Bengals have a one-game lead in the division. If the Ravens would beat them, they'd have the head-to-head sweep and thus the tiebreaker. So I have a feeling the division is going to ride on that. But whoever loses is probably still getting in. It's not going to be winners in, losers out, but there's still going to be a division title on the line.
Yes, that's right. It's hard, actually, to figure out which ones to pick here for my last pick. I know we're going to go to a break here, right?
You got some time.
Yeah, good.
Take a break.
Good. I got to
filter through
this. You have an
extra 30 seconds or 45 or whatever it is. Depends on how much longer I talk until we go to break. We'll be back with more PFT Live right after this. Chris is agonizing over his final pick in the draft, the best games left in the 2022 season. Have you come to a conclusion?
I have, and I'm going to chicken out. And because of, I don't know how important a Week 17 or a Week 18 matchup is going to work, I'm going to stay with another matchup in Week 16 here. And I'm going to go – this one's got implications not only for the playoffs, but, you know, even some other things that go along with this. The Thursday night football game, the Jags and the Jets. I mean, we know both of these teams are in kind of must-win situations. And then I think when you add on top of the questions of Zach Wilson and the future, and now the way Trevor Lawrence has started to look here over the last 4 and 5 weeks, I think that adds even more pressure to the game. Maybe more pressure for Zach Wilson and the Jets. You know, last year they played each other, and Zach Wilson and company got the best of the Jaguars. Right now, it seems like, you know, if you listen to the fan bases, it's going in totally opposite ways. So I'm pumped for this Thursday night matchup. I think it's going to be a good one. A lot of studs on the field, and, you know, two quarterbacks that got big time potential, and Trevor Lawrence obviously playing a more clean game right now than Zach Wilson.
The top two picks in the 2021 draft, and obviously Lawrence ahead of Wilson right now. And the Jets dropped the ruse on Tuesday. They could have waited until today. They ruled out Mike White on Tuesday. As we had reported, it was unlikely he was going to play. He's got that rib that needs to calcify, or he's at risk of a punctured lung. So he's out. Zach Wilson's in. I'm going to Week 18, and I'm going to Orchard Park, New York. Patriots-Bills. Regardless of knowing whether or not the Patriots need the game to get into the playoffs, regardless of knowing whether or not the Bills need the game to be the one seed, I just think that if the final chapter of the Patriots 2022 season is getting stomped by the Bills like they did the last time they played their 47-17 in the playoffs last year,
right,
the storm clouds are going to be there. What the Crafts do about it remains to be seen, but the storm clouds have gathered. What happened on Sunday is on Bill Belichick. They have been down this year. The fan base is up in arms. How much longer will this last? And I don't think they'll fire him. I think they'll make it known he's available to be had by another team that wants to compensate the Patriots. That's how it will end if it does end. But if they get embarrassed by the Bills to end the regular season and don't go to the playoffs, Chris, I'm not ready to say it won't be done.
I mean, I hear you. It does seem like there are some, you know, clouds gathering there. I think it's a little crazy as of right now. But, hey, you know, this is the NFL. It's the reality of the situation. And there have definitely been some things you can be skeptical about as far as the greatest coach and some of the decisions he's made for this football team this year. I understand that. So you're right, Mike. I don't know. That could be interesting. Bills, they handled them a few weeks ago on Thursday night. That'll be scary for the Patriots.
And some big changes could indeed be coming. Either way, big changes are coming to the Patriots. The question is, will Bill Belichick be the coach next year? We are done for today. Have a great Wednesday. See you tomorrow.
See ya.